good evening. It's Friday night and another edition of Little Atoms on Resonance 104.4 FM with me, Neil Denny. Little Atoms is a show about ideas. Each show features a guest from the worlds of science, journalism, politics, academia, human rights, or the arts in conversation. I guess tonight we're welcoming back an old guest, Philippa Scoffey.
Hello, Neil. I get bottom billing, I notice. Artistic, you know, academics, worthy people, scientists, and then right at the bottom, artistic types.
Thanks, Philip.
Thanks, Neil.
Philippa Scoffey, under the enigmatic working name The Grey Man, is one of the UK's top psychic illusionists or mind readers and has been working as such for around 10 years. He's currently previewing his stage show, Six Impossible Things Before Dinner, in London. It's showing at the he's playing on the 24th of July, next Thursday, at the Soho Theatre. And then he's embarking on a month-long residency at the Edinburgh Festival at the Pleasance Theatre. So, Philip, again, welcome back to Little Atoms.
Thank you very much. Just from a housekeeping point of view, there'll be a couple more... I think it's sold out now on the 24th, but there'll be a couple more shows after Edinburgh back in London at the Pleasance in Islington in September.
Right. You work as the Grey Man, which obviously we talked about last time you were on the show. One of the selling points of the Grey Man is that it's very pared down. You sort of eschew a lot of the sort of flamboyant stage magic techniques. I'm interested in how this is going to... How are you going to do a stage show? Are you not the Grey Man for the stage show, or are you going to somehow translate that into a big theatre show?
I think Six Impossible Things Before Dinner is an extension of that philosophy of the Grey Man, and perhaps for the first time I'm nailing my colours a bit more honestly to the mast. As the Grey Man, it was all about me being pretty neutral about how I claim to be doing what I do, be it psychic or psychological or just simple con-mannery. Six Impossible Things Before Dinner, I'm pretty overt in that I don't believe I'm doing it psychically. But the point now with the show is not about what we believe, but why we believe. And the mind reading is really perhaps just a vehicle to make that point. And if topiary or falconry was a better medium of getting people to question why they believe stuff, I'd be using that. But mind reading fits the bill perfectly, because you can take sceptical, rational types and make them go, OK, I don't believe in this stuff, but I can't for the life of me see how that works.
I would come to a show on falconry, definitely.
That would you?
Be good. Yeah, absolutely.
Have I gone wrong?
So tell us about, you know, where's the sort of the genesis of the idea of the show come from? When did you first decide to do it?
I got approached by somebody who wanted to talk to me about doing a mind reading show up in Edinburgh, and it just felt like the really right kind of challenge to be coming along at this time. I'm working in a nice small venue up there at the Pleasance. It's a little 70-seater, and it kind of forced me to just get on with things. There's nothing like a deadline to make you write a show. So that was the sort of the start of it. I was very passive, really, in its evolution, but got very active very quickly and started writing the show, and was pleased and have been really pleased with the way it's gone. I found it easier than I thought it was going to be to get an idea that I felt was robust, because I wanted to do something that was more than just a series of intriguing but sort of disconnected magic tricks, in effect. I wanted people who wanted to laugh to get some of that, perhaps, people to be intrigued by amazing mind reading to get some of that, but also for there to be a sort of a deeper narrative which perhaps holds the attention of people who wanted something a little more worthy or earnest, without sounding it too, making it sound too pompous.
Well, can you expand on how you're doing that? Obviously, you're probably not going to be keen to give too much away, but how, you know...
Yeah, there's a slightly surprising ending. It's not the ending you'd expect at a mind-reading show. I am low, I guess, to give too much away. I even asked the audience, mousetrap-styly, not to talk. By all means, tell your friends about what a wonderful evening you've had, but don't give away any information that would sort of reduce the experience they've just had. But I keep doing things and then re-questioning the audience on what they believe. And I take them on a journey where, without realising it, I hope, they start acknowledging a belief in things that they didn't 20 minutes earlier or 30 minutes earlier. And, of course, it builds and builds and builds till this culmination at the end.
So is it, I mean, it says in the blurb or the press release for the show, what interests Philip is not whether people can read minds or not, nor even how they do it, but what the rational, perhaps even cynical mind does in the face of a refutable demonstration, and why some minds don't even seem to need that.
Well, I don't know why you wasted your time getting me in. That's much better than anything I've said. Who wrote that? It's very good. Yeah, all that.
So, well, let's talk about those sort of two aspects of it. What's that sort of like when you see somebody who's somebody who comes into it with a more, like you said, a more cynical sort of attitude, like, you know, you're not gonna surprise me. I know what you're doing.
I assume that in the audience, and perhaps that's why the feeling of the show is different. A lot of my colleagues sort of kind of half squint and hope that everybody thinks they might be psychic. I'm kind of assuming the opposite. So when I say I will challenge what you believe is possible, the assumption is that I'm going to challenge your beliefs on what is psychic, whether psychic is possible. I'm going to try and convince you that it is. In fact, quite the opposite. I'm going to make you aware of beliefs that you have that aren't rational, even though you think you're a rational person, and I'm going to make you challenge the validity of those beliefs. But the assumption, of course, when you go to see a mind reading show is I'm going to challenge you to believe in what I do. But quite the opposite. We've all believed in nonsense. I mean, I believed when I was about 7 that World War I was started over a piece of cheese. And I took that with me for 3 years and lost friends arguing that that was the truth and whatever they'd been told was wrong. I believed Uri Geller was real when I was about 16 because I wanted to. It was more exciting that he was bending spoons with his head than his hands. We all still maintain beliefs. Many of us believe that no two snowflakes are the same. That's nonsense. Plenty of snowflakes are the same. People believe that if you cut a worm in half, both ends will live. That's nonsense. Neither end lives. People believe that water goes down the wrong way in the southern hemisphere, down a plug hole. That's nonsense. But we all have these beliefs, and society is so packed with information, we have to take shortcuts. So from time to time, we make the mistake of believing what we read in the Daily Mail.
So those sort of things you're talking about confronting people in the show with, mm-hmm. with these sort of beliefs, or if, again, you know, you're not going to want to give too much away, but is there anything, do you talk about a certain belief and then sort of demonstrate how it's wrong or something?
In one of my impossible things, I pit myself up against Mystic Meg's lively contribution for The Day in the Sun. So she's written her incredibly accurate horoscopes, although I've got a feeling that she just writes them really general, so it applies to as many people as possible.
No, you don't think that.
I can't prove it, that's so I have to be cynical. Careful with what I say. But I put myself up against her, and we get a Taurian or whatever it is for the day out from the audience, and they tell me a bit about their lives, and then we read what Meg said, and we read a prediction that I wrote earlier that day. And so far, I've done better than Meg, I'm pleased to say. But she'll have her moment. Over 26 shows, she's going to beat me one day.
And in all the time that she's been doing it, I'm sure she's been right a few times, of course.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's an entertainment. It's not a lecture on belief systems and the psychology of need and that. But those things are what colour it. But you can come along and enjoy a funny man doing mind-reading tricks without taking anything else away as well.
So it's about a month mm-hmm. that you're doing. Well, I've written, what were the dates again that you're actually in Edinburgh?
I think previews up in Edinburgh start on the 30th for 2 or 3 days, and then we go into the run proper up until the 25th of August.
So is that the sort of daunting idea, going up to the Edinburgh Festival and doing like a month's residency? How do you envisage it?
Yeah, I've not really thought about it too much, being away for a month. I think it's probably a bit of a sort of Narnia-type environment for that month. I guess you're pretty shielded from anything important that's happening in the world and living in this sort of thespy bubble, which might be fun. I don't know.
Of course, you're competing against loads of other shows and loads of other places.
It's vast. And I think you've got to go with a bit of a sort of... You've got to remove yourself from it slightly, otherwise you'll go mad. There's 1,000 or so shows every day there. So if I don't have many people in a show one day, I hope I don't take it too personally. It's going to be a hoot. It's got to be a hoot. I'm going up there and I'm performing my show every day for an hour, and I'm looking forward to it hugely.
The Grey Man is still...
he lives.
Is still current.
Yeah, yeah. It's not being particularly focused on. I think marketing people felt it was a bit of a marketing nightmare, The Grey Man. I don't agree necessarily, but I'm new to all this, so it'd be daft to argue with them.
Well, I suppose it's difficult to market yourself and then market a sort of an anonymous person at the same time.
Do you know where the 6 impossible things before dinner comes from, oh literary skeptic that you are?
I do, but now you've challenged me on a live radio show, my mind's gone completely blank.
It's a quote from Alice Through the Looking Glass. The White Queen says, quite often I believe 6 impossible things before breakfast. And it's often used as a quote to show how we are perhaps sometimes swayed by a need to believe rather than the evidence that we should be considering when we decide what we believe, and that we're all prone to it.
Do you think, last time you was on the show, we talked about psychic TV and things, and you know, baby psychics and pet psychics and things. I was listening to the show again this afternoon, and you came up with a really great phrase, a faith-based product, which I sort of really like. And we can include things like obviously religion in that, and beliefs in sort of alternative medicine and stuff, and I suppose beliefs that, you know, giant lizards rule the world. And
well, anything where there's no evidence to support your belief is a faith-based product, I guess.
There's clearly a huge appetite for this. I mean, again, we've talked about this before, that there are, you know, there are loads of programs on the TV, you're sort of crossing over, you're most haunted and that sort of thing. Hardly any shows from a sort of skeptic perspective, mainly because they're a bit sort of...
I think there's some. I mean, there's that Professor Kathy Sykes at Bristol University who's done a number of interesting programs, trying to give a balanced view on what might be going on in these various sort of slightly more esoteric practices. But I take your point. I think if you did an analysis of all that's programmed,
there's a much bigger audience for the psychic programs.
Yeah. A pro psychic book will outsell a skeptical book by about 10-1. I think is the figure you hear quoted.
And the last time you were on the show again, we spoke about, you know, clearly if you were going around pretending to be a psychic, you could probably make a lot more money from it. But clearly that would be evil. So it's a bad thing to do. But to what extent do you think, you know, being able to promote a stage show is you're going to be benefiting from that sort of audience as well, aren't you? Who's the audience to come in and see your show?
Again, I've got little experience here. I imagine it's going to be a range of people, certainly until any kind of reviews come out, where reviewers might intimate that it's more sceptical tone. If you see the poster, it says mind reading while you wait and six impossible things. I'm sure it will attract people whose belief systems are perhaps different to mine, but I love them all.
Do you expect people that came into it expecting to see a Derek Okora type thing?
They might want to keep the receipt. Well, if they come, that's lovely too.
But do you think there's any chance that any of those people might be swayed?
What, to not believe in Derek Okora? I doubt it.
To not believe that the Coriolis effect or whatever.
Yeah, I mean. It's the old, for those that believe no evidence is necessary and for those that don't, no evidence will ever suffice. Derek Okora is a brilliantly clever man, and whether people believe in him is now almost, it's irrespective of what he actually does or doesn't do. They've just attached that need onto that figure, and now it doesn't matter how many producers come out revealing how he may or may not have achieved some of the things he does. The believers don't want their messiah being disparaged, so well, they set him up, they made him look, you know, it's that's a fight that you'll never win.
But there's also, I mean, those sort of programs are very much, again, the sort of ghost hunting type, the most haunted with busted or whatever it is you get, are very much, you know, entertainment
ghost busting with busted
type programs, aren't they? They're billed. This is again why I think the sort of skeptic programs are never quite as successful, because they're a bit more like a lecture and forgive the phrase, but some grey man pointing at you and saying, you know, that you shouldn't believe in this sort of nonsense, rather than just
our great hero Richard Dawkins isn't as charismatic perhaps as Derek Okora. So it's exactly the point you make. There's a lot less razzmatazz with the sceptical approach. And, of course, the people that tune into the sceptical programme are the very people that already are on that kind of way of thinking anyway. To me, it really isn't about persuading people who give money to tarot readers anymore that they shouldn't. They know they shouldn't, but they know they need to, and that calling is far greater than any sort of fiscal prudence. It's about equipping people earlier on in life so they don't necessarily end up needing that kind of stuff to make their lives make sense, and can go back to seeing the beauty in the garden without believing in fairies at the bottom of it.
This afternoon I was again doing some more research on the internet, looking into more things to talk about. Exactly. And I didn't know this is one of the things you did. You do a sort of like a team building type training course.
I've come up in a rush.
Which is basically billed as, and this is interesting because I introduced you as one of the UK's leading mind readers. This one says, working in conjunction with one of Europe's leading protagonists.
Who does it?
Does it protagonist? Yes, it does. Can't read my own writing. Of mind reading, mind magic and psychological illusion.
When did I go from Britain's leading to Europe's leading?
I don't know. I was going to ask you.
And
that,
if we carry on chatting by 25 past, will I
be
the world's?
The world. Yeah? You never know.
Yeah.
We'll see where we get to. In this session, participants will get to experience some close-up mind magic and learn how to use some of the same techniques in their everyday life to improve their influence, impact, and effect on others. Now, this sounds quite quite self-help booky to me. So if I, Philip, if I wanted to if I wanted to win friends and influence people, if I wanted to seduce a member of the opposite sex, which of these sort of techniques could I employ?
Well, the first thing I do is stop talking about it in front of your newly found bride. That's a bad thing if you're going to have. Yeah, but that aside, that you've taken, I think, words. I have not heard those words before. From perhaps a slightly excitable agency that promotes this service.
That's exactly where it was from.
Right, and I have frequent and interesting discussions with them, suggesting, although I understand from a commercial point of view why those words might be sexy.
Because it might end up disappointing.
It does mean that the first 20 minutes of my little day with them is spent undoing some of the damage that does. It's not about learning the techniques that I use as a mind reader. That's perhaps the sexy end of it. Can we learn, you know, the principles and the techniques that you use to read people's minds? No. I'm a con man. I do it very well, but it takes years and years, and that's that. Can any parallels be drawn between what I do as a performer and what most corporate environments do? Absolutely. I think I've got quite a hard selling brief in what I do. If I'm working as a mingling entertainer at a drinks reception, during the course of an hour, I may go up to 10 or 12 groups, uninvited, unknown, and unexpected. And what am I selling them? The impossible. That's a nightmare sales scenario. To go up to people who didn't want you, don't know who you are, and never asked for what you've got. And then when you tell them what you've got, you're telling them it's the impossible. There are certainly skills that I can take from that scenario and apply to a corporate scenario. I have to make that group of people in a very short period of time decide they want to watch and indulge what I want to do. And those skills are just as useful whether you're trying to get 26-year-olds in a primary school listening, or three important influencers in a business meeting. And without giving you the whole drone of a day's worth of stuff, I'm very clear that this is not about taking the linking rings, performing it, and then talking about teamwork in the workplace. This is repulsive. But there are certain things which corporations feel they want to pay me to come and talk to them about.
So elaborate on that a bit. What sort of... In fact, before you do that, let's just go back, because, again, we spoke about what you've just said. Your approach to going up to a group of people is, this is the grey man's act, which obviously we talked about last time, but we haven't now. So you could be approaching a group of people wearing, a top hat and a bow tie, in which case people would go, "Oh, there, here we go, is the magician. Let's stop and see what he's going to do."
But clearly, or let's run.
Yeah, that's very true. But clearly, you're not doing that.
No.
So this is the position that you've set yourself up in, that you've got. So tell us, in the sort of business context, how you go about doing that.
Working as I do in a corporate environment. Mm. First, I look at the group I'm going to approach. There are certain groups not to approach, and there are certain groups to approach in the earlier stages of an evening or a function, whatever it may be. What I look for specifically is really hard to quantify, but I'm looking that there isn't one person holding court there and three people laughing hilariously at what they're saying, because that's not the time to go and interrupt them. Everyone's fine, and the person that's holding court will resent me coming along. I try and find the people that are perhaps a little peripheral to the event, who aren't as integrated, because I know what I'm going to do for them, what I'll leave them with is something quite nice and neutral to talk about. So if I bring John and Jane over there to, and I beckon two people from over there, they may not know each other, but I leave them with something to talk about. In terms of how I get John and Jane to stop and want to listen to me, rather than recoil in horror and run, is personal human dynamics. And to explain this over the radio now, but smiling, eye contact, name recall, they're very simple things. Take a breath freshener, don't have egg down your tie. I mean, they're not the sexy, interesting, psychodynamic things you're perhaps expecting, but those very fundamental things are hugely important. Then you get a bit more subtle. You notice that one of the chaps isn't entirely thrilled that his girlfriend's fascinated by what I'm doing, and puts a slightly protective arm around her, sort of as if to suggest she's with me. Now, inexperience can exacerbate that situation. Experience says, make that guy the hero in the next piece as soon as you can. make him like you. It's very manipulative, but I'm not doing it to then get their bank account details. I'm doing it to speed up the process that I want to indulge with them. So yes, you're constantly observing what people are giving you, and I guess you're in a heightened state to normal levels of conversation where you haven't got such an agenda in such a short amount of time. Is any of this making any sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to just go back there as well, because you mentioned at the beginning that, you know, you wouldn't go up and interrupt a group where there's somebody who's holding court and is doing that. And then you've just mentioned getting the guy who's a bit sort of, you know, a bit sort of annoyed on side. Yeah. Is there also an aspect that you need those people on side and you need not to basically annoy them, because you need them not to... to be antagonistic while you're doing your act? You know, you don't want them to ruin it or anything.
Not so much that, but there's just nothing to be gained. If I walk away and he's feeling slightly riled and the adrenaline levels are higher, that's going to be linked to me, and the association is a bad one. Mm-hmm. If as I walk away he's beaming, his girlfriend's looking at him adoringly, it's about leaving your ego at home for a couple of hours, my job. That's really all it is. The downside is, as a performer, you've naturally got quite a big ego. So that's the trick. But I've seen performers go up to a group of people and ask, you know, hi, I'm the magician. What do you do? And the bloke says, well, I'm an intergalactic space explorer, and last week I was bodyguarding the Queen. That's great. Pick a card. No, shut your face. Listen to this guy's story, because it's infinitely more interesting than your card trick. And it's about losing that ego, which allows you to be more empathic and listen and all the things that men aren't very good at normally.
Well, we've got 5 minutes left, and the last time you were on the show, we defied Radio Convention, and you showed us a couple of little
miracles,
indeed.
Well, we can try something. It depends how nicely you play with me, Neil. The idea, obviously, mind reading. You think something that I couldn't possibly know, and we mentioned this very briefly just before you started. I asked you to think about the first girl. But that's all we did. It was literally as we went on air, because not everyone can remember the first girl that you ever became aware of girls over. So it might have been age 6 in the playground. You wanted to pull her pigtails or whatever it may be, share your packed lunch with her. But that first little frisson, do you remember the name of that girl?
Yes.
Would you recognise her if she was to walk in now?
No.
No. So it's been years. What kind of age were you at when this was all going down?
6 or 7.
Okay. Would any amount of sitting on my face or whatever it is on the internet, would that help me find out any of these sort of social networking sites?
No.
It's not something you've written down?
No.
When's the last time you spoke about this?
I've no idea. Long time ago.
Okay. And do you know her surname or first name?
First name.
Okay. This is making great radio, but... I'm thinking really hard.
He is, and he's writing something as well, which is
Would you
exciting.
Be more convinced if I rub my temples in any way at this point?
Yeah, I would.
You would?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, God, yeah, wow.
Powerful,
he's reading my
it?
Mind. I can feel it.
If this is freaking you too much, Neil, let me know. No, seriously, you got this name. Let's not throw this minor miracle away. Just focus on one of the letters in the name, okay? You've got one of the letters in your head. It's an N. No, it wasn't. Okay, I've written a name down here, Neil. This could either be triumphant, and you'll think more of me, and perhaps even like me slightly more than you did just before this moment. If it's wrong, could we gloss over it?
Yes,
actually,
absolutely.
Lie. Just say how good it was. They'll never know.
Exactly. Shall I get the piece of paper?
We'll go to our independent producer who sat there. I've written a word there. That's a name, isn't it? A girl's name. Okay, thank you, Ben. For the first time, I'm not sure about that at the end. It could be that. Do you see the difference? Yeah. Okay, for the first time, what's the name of this girl, Neil? What is it?
It's say. Joanne.
Joanne, okay. What does that say on my piece of paper? It says...
says Joanna.
It says Joanna, and then I've crossed it out,
enough.
And I've said to Ben, I'm not sure about this end bit, and I wrote an E underneath
it. I have to admit, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. It says
Anne.
Joanna.
The incredible thing
the
is...
and he's put an E. That is
and
fantastic.
And she's here this evening, Neil, so if you... No. Look, he went... He went quite white, listener. There's a little mind-reading trick. Couldn't know that. I might be psychic.
I think we
rule this possibility out too easily sometimes on this show,
That is absolutely
Neil.
Remarkable. I mean, I am sitting here quite sweaty and shocked, because I have just had my I have just had my mind read, and now my head hurts.
Slightly violated?
Yes, I do.
That's what I'm going for.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And it's not good.
No.
And I'll be billing you for the counselling afterwards.
Right.
Obviously, I think.
Would
I
you say fiddled with is too strong?
Yeah, very possibly.
Okay.
Very possibly, but no, certainly, certainly. Molested.
Molested.
Shall we say.
That's
yeah,
a nice word.
I believe so. I
to think wrap
I've,
things
been,
up on.
I've been mind molested.
I'm a mind molester.
Well, we're out of time, so Philip.
On that bombshell.
Thank you very much.
Thank
for,
you very
for
much
for the molestation.
Neil. Always a pleasure.
And we'll be back next week.